you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, joined today, Friday, by my co-host, John Carman, who, of course, is former Secret Service, U.S. Customs, and a whole host of other background, making him especially appropriate for discussion of the subject we have today, where I anticipate being joined by Alan Salarian, M.D., who is a former top shrink for the FBI, the head of their rapid response teams in the past, was celebrated, even lionized in Washington, D.C. for his expertise, and still he began exposing CDC fudgy numbers to create the impression of an opioid epidemic that was not in fact taking place, at which point he became subject to a massive assault, armed FBI agents, raided his home, froze his financial accounts, seized his three Mercedes, took all of his computers, subjected him to horrific abuse. He's a guy I admire tremendously. He's got a keen interest in JFK. He's done a series of paintings about the assassination that were also appropriated, have been sold on eBay, some as high as $5,000. I have one on my wall of Elm Street, which I admire. He's a wonderful man subjected to tremendous abuse. I'm hoping he'll be here as soon as possible, because I want to begin with one of the most famous murder cases in American history, namely O.J. Simpson, where we have a new report now. O.J. Juror admits innocent verdict was revenge for Rodney King. Get this. Has justice been dead in this country for years? Has O.J.'s death brought new light on this, as well as reveal how biased the jury was? The blood trail went from the dead bodies of the victims at one of their homes all the way to O.J.'s and his bedroom and bathroom. Despite the amount of evidence, O.J. was declared innocent. So the years went by. He enjoyed freedom. A freedom that came to an end Thursday, April 11th, after, of course, a period of incarceration, because he was found guilty, not during the criminal trial, but during the civilian trial that followed, where a far more competent attorney presented the case than Marcia Clark. But as I have admitted before, Marcia committed a massive blunder, because the most important witness had been at an intersection in between Nicole's home and O.J.'s estate, When a minor traffic jam ensued, a white Bronco without the lights on came out, and the driver started yelling and screaming for everyone to get out of his way, and it was O.J. Simpson. And because she had sold her soul to her story to a tabloid, I think it probably was the National Enquirer for $5,000, Marcia Clark refused to put her on the stand. Well, this was insulting and absurd. Marcia, having an excessive sense of legal propriety, that because this witness had sold her story, she wasn't credible. Look at this. One of the jurors admitted during an interview, "Do you think there were members of the jury who voted to acquit O.J. because of Rodney King?" "Yes." "How many felt that way?" "Probably 90%. "Did you feel that way?" "Yes." "That was payback." "Huh? You think that's right?" Shoulder shrug. To those who don't know, Rodney King was filmed March 3rd, 1991, being attacked by police officers. The video led to a trial, and when the officer were pronounced not guilty, the L.A. riots began. Here we have a video. Let's play this.
"Do you think that they're members of the jury that voted to acquit O.J. because of Rodney King?"
"Yes."
"You do?"
"Yes."
"How many of you think felt that way?"
"Oh, probably 90% of us."
90%? "Did you feel that way?"
"Yes."
"That was payback."
"Uh-huh."
"You think that's right?"
Fascinating, fascinating. John, give me your thoughts and reaction to that already. I mean, my opinion was the evidence was simply overwhelming. I didn't see any doubt. There is a theory floated by a guy who did a video. I think he's an attorney saying O.J.'s guilty but not a murder, where he suggested it was O.J.'s son Jason who committed the crime. But this was so vicious. I don't think anyone but an O.J. hyped up on meth could have actually committed these murders as they were done. They were so savage, where it appears, you know, he was so paranoid about Nicole. He was so jealous that he was spying on her all the time. And I think when he came over and found she'd lit all these candles in her bathroom, you know, around her tub, which is something she did before a romantic liaison, that he was immediately suspicious when Ron Goldman showed up at the door allegedly to return her glasses. And John, my opinion is that was their signal. Nicole would deliberately leave her glasses, then he'd have the pretext to come by to return the glasses for them to continue their affair. And I think Nicole came up when she heard an initial exchange between O.J. and Ron, and he hit her on the head with the end of his knife, knocking her unconscious. Then he sliced and diced Ron, and then realizing Nicole, when she awakened, would be a witness, he slit her throat so viciously, virtual decapitation. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I studied that case, and as I mentioned earlier off the air, I was working at the border at U.S. Customs waiting for the vehicle to show up by chance from L.A. And we had I had a piece of paper with the white Bronco on it and the license plate and all that. But I reviewed that case very particularly. You know, Van Netter supposedly had vials of blood that he had samples and doing stuff, and then Mark Furman. And the extreme brutality of the fact that how a knife or an edged weapon was used. And yet he did have a son that was supposedly a butcher. And I go, those guys butcher stuff all day long. It's not a big deal. They know how to use it, no different than certain martial arts people would. You know, I mean, if you know how to use a tool, you use it for one thing. But if you use it emotionally, it's like this person who got killed, a lady got killed by a rapist. And the suspect, I won't say the individual ever on a show, ever. It's a suspect, folks. The guy stabbed the female like 50 times. You know, in martial arts, it only takes one cut and that's it if you know what you're doing. But these people are emotionally violence, and that's part of the thing there. But to cut it to the point where it was almost severed is extreme. But I always had some doubts about that case. There were still a lot of technical doubts, tampering of evidence, and things like that. But it, no matter what, it was vicious. But in the bottom line, in the bottom sense of the comment, the question is, it doesn't matter what you're doing to decide a case. And you don't, you never decide because, well, we need to give one back to the other guys. We need to sacrifice this one for what they did to Rodney King. That's BS. I don't believe in that. It's either he's guilty or he's not. It's a separate case. And that's it. Rodney King later died of an overdose in another situation years later. But it's just the idea that when these people do that, justice goes out the window. There's no purpose to it.
Well, John, bear in mind, I mean, anyone who's seen a brutal assault on Rodney King, I mean, he was probably hit 100 times by 5 different cops with their batons swinging as hard as they could. Now, Rodney was a big guy. But yeah. I mean, it was absurd. And what they did to try to defend him was slow it down and try to discount each of the swings, and it didn't do that much harm. I mean, what bullshit. I mean, that was just ridiculous, John. Go for it.
I'm highly trained. And if I take somebody down, martial arts, if I have to escalate to a baton or something like that, but 9 times out of 10, I've always used martial arts. I always get a hold of the hands. That's all you have to do is get a hold of the hands. If the guy's refusing to comply, you get his wrist. It's real simple. I've done it hundreds and hundreds of times. They get cuffed up, no harm. You search them, you put them in the back of the car with the other two guys that complied. That's it. No, they pulled out their batons. If you hit a guy with a baton over and over again and you intentionally do something to hurt him, you could break bones, clavicles, arms, wrists. If you take it with two hands and hit a certain part of the body, you're doing some brutal stuff there. It didn't look right. It looked like it was almost set up. These guys are stupid. But I've seen stupid cops that will try to get involved in something after I already cuffed somebody up and chased a guy down. And the guy comes over like he's going to wail on him. I put my hand up to block him, just like Carol Horn, famous case in New York. And she got exonerated later after they effed with her life and her career. Same thing with Chris Dorner, LAPD, who tried to block the assault by a white female training officer. He gets fired because he did the right thing. So there's a lot of corruption. I've reported the same stuff even in the government agencies. So I agree. They overdid that. They should have never done it what they did. It was wrong.
And yet they were acquitted. You know, I mean,
yes, they got off.
I mean, that was just absurd that they were acquitted. I couldn't believe it, John.
That was not justice. That was just crazy. You know, and they should have been charged just like the other ones in the. Yeah.
I'd love to get Alan's take on OJ. I mean, I was hoping he'd be here already. I mean, encourage him to join. Maybe he's waiting to the bottom of the hour. I have another story, by the way, about OJ from the Babylon Bee, which is, you know, so brilliant in their satire. Here we have OJ Simpson excited for God to tell him who the real killer was. U.S. O.J. Simpson has passed away from cancer at the age of 76. According to sources from the afterlife, the former football star is looking forward to asking God who really killed his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson. I've been racking my brains for decades trying to figure out who may have done it, said Simpson. It'll be great to have all my questions finally laid to rest. I really can't imagine who might have committed such a crime. At publishing time, O.J. Simpson's request unfortunately remained unanswered after a majority black jury declared him not dead. John, I tell you, the Babylon Bee is hilarious. Give us your further thoughts. I mean, did you ever have serious doubt about whether O.J. were the responsible party or not?
Well, I watched the case. Now, remember, the level of evidence is much more critical in a criminal case as opposed to a civil case, which means you could sue them, and the level is much lower. So that means that you could go in there and say, well, this, that, and the other happened. All they wanted to do is get a judgment against him, and they took away all of his life savings type of thing, you know, in the millions or whatever it was. Then they went after him again in Vegas, and he had a team of people get involved in getting some property back. That was like a jumping board to go after him again. So he was targeted because they couldn't get him on the criminal case. But it almost reminds me about the Bill Cosby case where they went after and killed his son because he was one of the richest black men that was going to take over a whole network. They wanted to block him from doing that. I don't know what OJ was doing. He was a very famous guy. How many times did you ever watch the Naked Gun series with Nielsen or whatever?
Leslie Nielsen. Yeah.
Funny as hell. And you go, wait a minute. Here's the contrast. He's playing a cop, and then later he gets involved in doing a homicide, you know, and he couldn't do the glove. Well, he couldn't put the glove on. You know, I just happen to have a prop right here because I get cold. You know, because of my diabetes. You know, here's the glove test. You know, I can't get it on, right? Well, if it's that small, it's unusual. Well, maybe it was somebody else's. But then, remember his chauffeur? I can't think of his name. Cato? Was it Cato?
Well, that was Cato Kalin, was his pool guy. He may have been his drug guy.
He was burning clothes, and he had a small defense wound maybe somewhere on his hand.
OJ did,
and if
yeah.
If you ever get attacked, folks, you know, you get attacked with a knife, there's a prop right there. You know, you better defend yourself, and no matter what, it'll come up. Something comes up with that stuff, but it's horrendous, you know, the forensics and stuff behind it. But it doesn't match his profile, you know what I mean? It doesn't match. So other people were saying they thought it might have been a relative, and he was trying to protect his relative.
Oh, how did it not match his profile? He was up on meth. He was jealous. He was paranoid. I mean, I think it fits 100%. And of course, we know as far as the glove is concerned, one glove was found at her place in Brentwood, the other on his estate in Rockingham, and they had the blood on there. They pulled a stunt in court, John, because these were skin-tight fitting gloves. But they had OJ put on latex gloves so they wouldn't contaminate the evidence, which made it impossible for them to fit. And then Johnny Cochran says, you know, if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. What rubbish. What odds that? What bullshit. But that was the sensational development of the trial, the pivotal moment.
Well, I don't watch cases on my spare time. I don't have spare time to look at cases. That's a special case. I would look at it daily and very meticulously about every little thing that they did. And if you watch other cases on the, you know, on the news or other court trials, you know, and you could see all the other famous people and all these other attorneys I won't mention, the ambulance chasers, then you see where they really mess up in the cases. I mean, even the Kyle Rittenhouse case, the judge should have thrown the case out. They altered evidence. They should have slammed those prosecutors who were obviously left-wing.
But John, he was acquitted. He was acquitted justifiably.
Oh, I know, but you don't want to put somebody through the pain and suffering of going through.
Well, it was a fascinating development because you had three. They just happened to all be Jewish, trying to kill him out there. Which is further undermining, you know, what we're undergoing here in America. We're being destroyed by a Jewish cabal. George Soros, on the one hand, domestically, Bibi Netanyahu, the foreign entanglements on the other, are destroying America and all this. These convoys, John, I have video where you have these convoys bringing these illegals, and on the door they have the Star of David. I mean, God. How awful. What astonished me about Kyle Rittenhouse, he was only like 17. He used that weapon with such alacrity. The guy was really, really good. And he killed two and wounded a third, and they were trying to kill him, hit him over the head with a skateboard. One actually had a gun. I mean, give me a break. That was such a wonderful case, the way it all developed and panned out. I had a legal expert who was going through every aspect and proving how in every single case it was justifiable self-defense, because there were three or four different engagements involved here. But that guy, in my opinion, is an all-American hero.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of cases over the last 10, 15 years I've monitored where they made decisions and you get attacked. And at some point, one guy was on the ground, the ground and pound thing. He finally pulled a gun out and shot because he was going to get killed or something. So, but there's a lot of standards, you know, if you've got a weapon or not and all these other things. They hold black belts to a higher standard, by the way. So don't tell people you're a black belt. You know, they speak from experience, because martial arts is real serious. But they always play that game, you know. But they'll twist anything around to do whatever they want to do to get out of it politically.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it? There was another case we were talking about, not just Rodney King and Kyle. There was another case you mentioned. Oh, yeah, right. We'll get into Reagan and all that when hopefully Alan joins us, because he has a theory.
I want to make sure he's on when I start talking about the connection with the poisons and the stuff that they use. Because, being in Secret Service, we are taught about many methods of how you may come across. And they still don't do it to the nth degree like I would.
Yeah.
Poison is number one at the top.
John, why don't you see if you can get a hold of Alan while I review another story?
Let me see if I got his number here. Hold on.
I think you do. I think I gave it to you, right? We have Paris accusing Moscow of implying that the French Secret Service helped terrorists in the concert area. That's a good one. Meanwhile, U.S. is transferring weapons seized in the Middle East to Ukraine, and that they've concealed, undercounted Ukrainian spending by $14 billion. That Israel has killed the sons and grandchildren of the Hamas political bureau leader they already assassinated. That Bibi announces he's planning to expand his war outside of Gaza. Let's check this out from UNZ, UNZ.com, which is the hottest website in the world today. Breaking. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu says his country is preparing for scenarios in other arenas, claiming whoever hurts us, we hurt them. Right now, Bibi's fighting a war. It's not an actual war. There is no serious enemy he's confronting. Basically, he's just slaughtering kids. Hamas does exist, of course, and they do shoot rockets, sometimes blow up tanks. But the IDF rarely confronts them on the ground. The overwhelming majority of operations are bombings of civilian targets. That's been the case for 7 months. Now he's planning to invade Lebanon. This is going to be an actual war. In fact, it's a war the Jews lost in 2006. Presumably, there is no plan to repeat that loss. And the Jews may well use so-called tactical nukes. They will presumably level Beirut almost as badly as they leveled Gaza. The Biden administration has made it abundantly clear that this will be allowed and will be supported unconditionally. The attacks on Lebanon will trigger a direct response from Iran, which will allow Israel to escalate with Iran and then drag the U.S. into the war. At least that is the plan. It is obviously the plan. Who knows if it's all going to unfold like that? I don't know. There are things that could happen to prevent it, including Turkey mobilizing. But no one can deny that this is the entire thinking of Bibi. And if you want to doubt about where the U.S. stands, here you have Brandon pledges ironclad support for Israel. U.S. President Joe Biden, Iran is threatening to launch a significant attack on Israel. oh, wonderful, here he is. But as I told Netanyahu, our commitment to Israel's security against these threats from Iran and its proxies is ironclad. We will do all we can to protect Israel's security. Well, I'm very pleased we're being joined by Alan Solarian. Alan, my dear friend, we've missed you. I wanted to get your comments on the O.J. Simpson case right off the bat before we turn to JFK. Could you give us your thoughts? And I've already introduced you as the former top shrink for the FBI, the head of the rapid response team, and what happened when, even though you were being lionized at the time in Washington, the most celebrated shrink in the city, that when you began to expose CDC fraudulent statistics on an opioid crisis that was non-existent, they raided your home, seized all your computers, your three Mercedes, froze your bank account, and it was very downhill from there. Alan, I honor you as a great American for your courage to stand up to the authorities. And now I just thought, before we turn to your assessment of the death of JFK, and John, by the way, here is former Secret Service, former U.S. Customs, and he's very familiar with flechettes and the like, Alan. I think you're going to really enjoy interacting with him. Give us initially your take on O.J., if you would be so kind.
We all watched O.J. and a lot of drama. I think if you put the pieces together, you know that he was guilty, but for political reasons and other manipulations, he was found not guilty. And it's sad, it's even sad now that he dies, and there is no recognition of his victims.
Nicole and Ron Brown, Ron Goldman, yeah. Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, yeah.
It's very unfortunate.
Alan,
anyways, I think historically it was very useful to address and expose racial divisions and conflicts in our country.
Alan, apologies. Stand by. We got a break. And then we'll continue with Alan Solarian and John Carman on OJ and JFK. You don't want to miss a word of this.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
I'd like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Yeah. join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Jim Fetzer with Alan Solarian, the former top shrink for the FBI, and John Carman, former Secret Service. We're going to be turning to Alan's analysis of the JFK assassination. Before we get there, however, we're talking about Rodney King. And Alan, you missed, but I had an open story about a juror saying that the innocent verdict was in retaliation for Rodney King, and that he himself and others voted to acquit OJ in retaliation. Does that surprise you?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I think it was very evident that the evidence did not matter. It was very clear about his guilt. But it's also historically true that African Americans have been discriminated against in our justice system. In some ways, this was a triumph or change or evolutions, knowing that even a guilty person may have fantastic legal representation and outsmart the system. I noticed this. I was in a partnership, psychiatric partnership, with 30, 40 doctors, I would say, the exact number I don't remember now, but 20% were minority doctors. And in our group, I remember, we all watched the JFK verdict, and all the African Americans celebrated.
The OJ verdict, okay. Yeah.
That tells the story. It has nothing to do, I think, with the reality, checks and balances. So,
yeah.
That's my
John. You mentioned how, you know, of course, there was blood on the glove. OJ had a nick on his hand. Very incriminating. You're saying when you're dealing with knife attacks, that's virtually inevitable. I wanted to ask the two of you about Tafari Campbell's death, because the day after, Barack Obama had bandages on his left hand. He had a black eye. It appeared to be obvious that he'd had an altercation with Tafari, and that Barack Obama himself had been responsible for his death. And there's been no pursuit of this. I don't think a mainstream venue has even mentioned the prospect. And yet the whole thing was absurd. He was supposed to have drowned in 3 feet of water when he was actually a competent swimmer. They had a mysterious phone call, I believe, was made by Michelle. Turns out Barack was actually on the scene where the event occurred. I mean, all this dribbles out later and later and later after massive cover-ups. John, first your thoughts, then Alan. John.
Well, being former Secret Service back in 74, right after Nixon left, it ain't what people think it is. I mean, I'm not going to downplay it too much, but there's a lot of secrets in the Secret Service, and they tend to cover up, too. And I reported stuff that people don't want to hear. I'm the guy that interviewed Hinckley, for Christ's sake. I'm the guy that actually contacted Hinckley in front of the White House at 2 a.m, and he wants to see the president in 1976. That's 5 years before the assassination attempt later in March 30th, 81, and the duty agent failed to do his job. That's very interesting. He should have been shipped off to St. Elizabeth's Mental Hospital that night. By the way, Alan, he was mentioning he wanted to see the president with this real weird tone of voice, like, I want to see the president. You know, oh, okay, well, what do you want to talk to about? Everybody wants to talk to the president. And they start going off about microwaves in his head Then he talked about sexually related terms I don't usually repeat on the air. And then Jody Foster. I said, oh, yeah, I got to get this guy in. Hold on, come on over here. And I pass him over real quick, check him out. Duty agent comes down. You know these duty agents? They come down in their business suits most of the time. They're on standby, and they're on midnight shifts studying for their masters, you know, or reading books or looking at magazines or doing some other, you know, other duties, BS. And as soon as he heard about Jody Foster, he says, oh, yeah, I want to talk to this guy. I said, good. You get him to St. Elizabeth's tonight, spell my name correctly, C-A-R-M-A-N, and I got to go look for Carlos the Jackal, Ilias Ramirez Sanchez, who was still on the loose back then. Never happened. It didn't happen. Somebody grabbed him and used him. He shows up at the Hilton that day, and that kind of ties in with what they did to Reagan that they may have also done to JFK because, and I know Cyril Wecht as a friend. I've talked to him for years. He's retired out at 93. But the stuff we, me and Jim were talking about this morning, you know, if you remember the old Man from U.N.C.L.E. series where they used certain rounds, they didn't kill people back in those days in the 66, 67 series on television. They would hit them with a special flechette round that would shoot little darts to put you out.
John, we're going to get on to all that because you and Alan have a lot of overlapping views about this. First, I want to get Alan's take on the Tafari Campbell death and the possible involvement of Barack Obama. Alan, have you thoughts?
You know, that's a topic I've not really studied, so I'd rather not comment on it. Whatever I say will be very official, and so I'll pass the question because I don't know.
Well, I'll comment.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I watch the news about it, and I'm looking at the wounds on Obama. This guy was a perfectly in healthy shape guy, and there's no way he's going to drown 3 feet of water unless he did it intentionally. So all the indicators are there that somehow he met some sort of a violent interaction with somebody, and maybe he got him down and held him long enough to get drowned. I mean, technically, he could drown on a tablespoon of water by other definitions. But it's all suspicious. Everything around Obama and Michelle. Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. I meant to say Michael. Because when they went to visit England and the Queen of England, God bless her, I actually protected the Queen of England, Elizabeth II, in 1976, you know, when they came to the White House for Gerald Ford and all that. You know, these water glasses, I'll hold up my cup as a sample, you know, prop here. Every time you take a drink, you're leaving saliva somewhere. They took the water glasses. They took them and put them in special plastic bags from the MI6 people, and they tested the saliva from Michelle's glass. The DNA comes up male. Okay, so that's what the results were. So I go.
Oh, excellent, John. I'm thrilled to hear that.
About that stuff, but people want to ask the question. They tested it. You know, you figure it out. Just like Obama was born in Mombasa, Kenya, but. Still, to this day, nobody's done anything about it. That's the problem I have is because they have U.S. passports, Mombasa or not. They're claiming Hawaii, 16 levels on a per birth certificate, and they want to keep covering things up. When's it going to stop?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a game. They're trying to push the envelope. Well, we could do better. We could get a trans president, such and such thing. You see what I mean? That's where they're pushing it. You know, maybe they'll get to a ball-looking individual. That's what they want to get to. You know, it gets into religious stuff, but
time is on our side because truth is on our side. So eventually, all these things. But you know, universe is no clock. This is an endless thing. God knows how long it will take. But time is on our side. So I hear you.
Alan, I'm so pleased to have you here today. And many of us believe that a pivotal turning point in American history occurred in 1963 with the assassination of JFK, and things just have not been right ever since. I think the evidence is simply overwhelming, but we still have debates over exactly how it was done, which is one of the ways in which your work becomes significant about addressing what really happened. And here we have, of course, the official narrative, three shots from the sixth floor of the school book depository. The initial report, by the way, was with three hits. You know, it's that Jack was hit in the back about 5.5 inches down below the collar, that Connolly was hit in the back, and then Jack was hit in the back of the head, killing him. That was the conclusion of the Secret Service and the FBI the day of the assassination. That evening, that was their report. Remarkably enough, that afternoon and evening, the major networks, such as NBC, were reporting two shots. One was a small, clean puncture wound to the throat. That was reported by Dr. Malcolm Perry, where he three times during a Parkland press conference after his death, the death of the president was announced by Malcolm Kilduff, the acting press secretary, saying it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head while pointing to his right temple. And that shot, too. So both of which were fired from in front. And so if you took what was being widely reported that day on radio and television in great detail, hour after hour after hour, with the reports of the two hits from behind, the back of the head and the back, then you actually get four hits to JFK, which have survived intact, in my judgment. I mean, the government would like to suppress it. Frank McGee, by the way, on NBC that night, was nobody's fool, said when these reports started to dribble in that according to the FBI and the Secret Service, all the shots had been above and behind. He said, this is incongruous. How can the man have been shot from in front, meaning the two shots they'd been reporting all day, from behind, which of course was absurd. And I believe it was in the subconscious of the American people as to when all this went down. You know, they were glued to television. This was the event that made television indispensable in every household. When a year later, the Warren Commission report comes out and claims the shots were only from above and behind, I think subconsciously the public knew something was wrong. And of course, they even doctored the whole movies of the assassination. Here's an extant version of the Zapruder film, which we know today the original was taken to the National Photographic Interpretation Center on Saturday. It was an 18-millimeter, already split film developed in Dallas, and they prepared briefing boards for the sequence of shots. But then Sunday, a second film was brought from Rochester. It was a 16-millimeter unsplit film by an agent who identified himself as William Smith. And they made the substitution, create new briefing boards. This is the version that Smith brought to the Photographic Interpretation Center. And you notice there's a big jump right in the beginning because they don't show the motorcade turning from Houston on down. Big jump. And then we have discovered now there was a subsequent limousine stop that endured, I initially thought, only 6 seconds. It actually appears to have been as long as 20. So since this film was running at 18.3, and the limo turn represented about 100 frames, this later stopped 400. We're actually missing more frames than we have in the extant version. But here is the extant version. This is from the John B. Costello version. You can find on my blog at assassinationscience.com and at assassinationresearch.com. And if you just do a search on his name, John Costello or John P. Costello, you'll find it. We know so much about what was faked here. I'm not going to address that in detail because Alan's work is so interesting in relation to the new book by David W. Mantic, who's the leading expert on the medical evidence in the world today, who ascertained that in addition to that shot to the back of the head and the shot to the forehead, there was a shot to the side of the head that appears to David, and I agree, to have come from the curbside sewer opening. So he has his book, and I did a blog about it on UNZ.com. New book, Nails How JFK Was Taken Out in Dallas. And I just checked today. It has over 600 comments. 616 comments. Alan, I don't know if you've seen this thread, but I mean, it's extensive. And some of those participants saying this is the best discussion of JFK they've ever seen. Since in my JFK special of 18 November 2021, I mistakenly asserted the additional fifth hit was to the left temple. Let me correct that impression. At my earliest opportunity, I've now read the pages of David's new book available online, as well as chapter 18 of Larry Revere's JFK Horseman of 2018, which I highly recommend. I've also verified with David his five hits are the following. One, hip to the back, 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column. Second, hip to the throat, which passes the windshield in route. Third, hip to the back of the head near the external occipital protuberance. That's a little bump on the back of your head where you'd rest if you were reclining in a tub, causing him to slump forward. Fourth, hip to the right temple forehead from the triple underpass fit, simultaneous with fifth, hip just above the right ear with a frangible bullet from the curbside sewer opening where their combined force blew out the harbor fragment, this triangular chunk of skull and debris galore. In fact, Bobby Hargis, the officer riding to the left rear, was hit with this debris so hard, he thought he himself had been shot. Now, Alan, you take exception and believe that a neurotoxin was involved, that it has somehow been missed. And with regard to the throat wound, you have an alternative interpretation based upon the following consideration: a small entry wound, no neck exit wound, no cervical damage, negative Comber test, signs of neurotoxin intoxication, vocal paralysis, no fight or flight response, delayed neurological death after catastrophic head injuries, no bruising or throat wound, no pallor mortis, poison weapon, specific cover-up, washing off the limo before the president died, lost brain, lost tissue samples, altered wood wound. Conclusion, definitive evidence of a poison pluchette. Alan, I want you to elaborate on all that and bring in John, too, because a pluchette was used to shoot Ronald Reagan at the Hinckley shooting, though not by Hinckley, but rather by the Secret Service agent pushing him into the limousine. Alan, yours.
Thank you. I think you made my presentation. Basically, I've been convinced that the small throat wound was caused by a flash hit, but it might have been an ice pellet. So I'm not that part. I'm not certain. What I'm certain on medical grounds is that we have all the evidence of neurotoxin intoxication. This is because this particular neurotoxin, soxitoxin, has a very fast, short incubation period before it works. So it works instantly, all right? So that fits the picture. And the symptoms are compelling that he was paralyzed, he was silent. Look at JFK, his behavior, and how he is responding to this ambush and to Governor Connally. One is a screaming and yelling, and the other is totally silent. There's something called fight and flight response, which is very natural for all animals, including us. There's no fight and flight response. This is obvious. And that is probably the most telling symptom of neurotoxin poisoning. Other symptoms that are obvious, neurological death. Yes, of course he was dead for all practical purposes right then. But he still had blood flowing. And he had some signs, superficial signs of being alive by the time he was declared dead at Parkland Hospital. This is about 30 minutes. Again, it's an indirect support for neurotoxin poisoning. Neurotoxin, also this particular neurotoxin, specifically saxitoxin, is known for its vascular effects of constriction. So anti-bruising fits, no pallor mortis, that also clinically fits. Putting all these things together, and now it's all statistics, because it's like flipping a coin. You have a 50-50% chance. If you flip the coin and one side comes 12 times in a row, this is identical to it. Because if you compare the possibility of a glass wound versus this, possibilities are 99.97% that a saxitoxin was involved. So the cover-up evidence is also very, very, very telling. The lost brain. Why would anybody lose the brain? Because we already know the shots and so on. There's no purpose to it. The fact that tissue samples disappear, it's very alarming. It's a red flag. It's as red flag as the Secret Service people washing off the limo before the president dies in the parking lot of Parkland Hospital. It's outrageous, and it's on record. When you put these things together, they don't fit anything else. Okay? There is a chemical cover-up. This is, again, a very strong point. I'm going to introduce my own personal experience, because as you thought and I thought all my troubles all these years were because of my attitude about the fake heroin crisis and the distorted, manipulated numbers of deaths attributed to narcotics and so on. In retrospect, I do believe that my JFK research, however minimal, you know, I've done very little. I'm not like you guys. You've done fantastic things. Fantastic. David's work, your, Rivera's work, it's amazing. My contribution is nothing. It's just one. So I write one article, goddamn article that's published in Medical Hypotheses, a respectable journal published by Elsevier. And guess what happens? The editor of Medical Hypotheses loses his job with false accusations. And thank you, Jim. I think at that time you and I wrote letters defending Bruce Charlton. What else? Then I'm a painter. I'm a painter because I've been so much pain discovering this ugly shit from JFK. And all I paint is JFK's paintings and Oswald. What happens to them? I give an exhibition, very successful exhibition in Dallas, and then they are auctioned off, 300 of them, and they disappear. And later they are sold on eBay. Well, this is an accident. What else? My office is raided on March 11, 2011. An office raid and house raid where they shackled my wife and my daughter and all kinds of indignities. I leave it alone. What is striking is this. I was drugged. I put this together over time and realized that I was given something. I fell asleep, and when I woke up, I was being interviewed by an FBI agent. And the topic is my JFK research. For God's sake, this is supposedly a raid because I'm a drug dealer. The former chief of FBI now is accused of being a drug dealer. Okay? And using his office as a cover for drug trafficking. So what does JFK research have anything to do with it? There are questions, and I'm interrogated. And thank God I took notes when I came home or the following day, and I remember this distinctly. So what else? I was imprisoned. Imprisoned in a federal penitentiary for about 4 months without a trial. I've never known any doctor, any psychiatrist to end up in a prison without a trial, with cockamamie excuses, Mickey Mouse excuses, okay, because of a false article written by Ariel Sabar in Washingtonian that painted me as a dangerous, crazy psychiatrist practicing. And so the judge orders me to a federal prison. And guess what happens in prison? I got raped. And I was put in solitary confinement. Now, all these things, I will not know the details. I think there was also a possibility that there was a rumor in that I was a snitch for FBI. So that might have explained the last, but that's a little detail. The point is, I had no business of spending time in a federal prison. I was not suicidal. I was not homicidal. There was no logic for a man like me to end up in prison in that dungeon. Okay. And lastly, I lost my medical license after practicing for 40 years. And guess what? Totally false accusations that a patient of mine had died of methadone overdose, for God's sake. Huh? The blood levels show that methadone was within normal limits. Blood test. What else you want? And the autopsy shows that this unfortunate fellow Kennedy, by the way, died of a congenital heart disease.
Alan, we'll be right back after this break with Alan Solarian, former top shrink for the FBI, and John Carman, former Secret Service agent, discussing the death of JFK.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war
is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm interviewing my dear friend and student of JFK, Alan Solarian, former the top shrink for the FBI, and we have John Carman here, my co-host on Fridays, former Secret Service Alan. What I find most persuasive about your report of your experience, which I heretofore assume was the FBI retaliating for your expose that the CDC was fabricating numbers to support an opioid epidemic, that it may have been instead in retaliation for your discussion of the use of a neurotoxin on JFK, is that they fired the editor of the journal. I mean, that is absurd. I have a great deal of editorial experience, major editorial boards of journals in philosophy of science. I founded an international journal. I mean, I'm telling you, this is virtually unheard of. And the fact that it was so contrived, the claims were so artificial, and that they were questioning you about your JFK research, not what you'd expose about CDC falsifying statistics. That is, to me, really powerful evidence. John, your thoughts. Would you agree? Your thoughts.
Yeah, I was listening carefully to what Alan said. And I see the same patterns even in my own case, because once you become a whistleblower or you have access to certain information that you're revealing the truth about, they tend to come after you with the most ludicrous charges, put you away, and that's supposed to be a way of them saying, hey, you get the point? No, they never have those conversations with you. They do it anyway to scare you off, even to the point of suicide, put you in prison, and all these other things. And it's outrageous what they do. But yet that's the whole point. They think they're not giving themselves away. Not once did ever anybody come up to you or me or maybe even Dr. Solarian and say, hey, look, we want you to keep quiet about that because you're touching areas that need to be kept quiet. Never, ever. They just go ahead and they put them away. In some cases, there was a lot of doctors who were exposed to stuff about COVID or something. And we're talking about neurotoxins and poisons. Yeah, they don't want people to know they could poison people at the drop of a dime. That's kind of a facetious comment, but that's why I always compared the flechettes about the size of a dime, like the one that was allegedly used by a CIA operative shooting at Reagan after Hinckley had already fired off six rounds, and then he gets hit when he's got his arm up, which is after the rounds are gone. So they don't want us to know these little secrets. You know, even the poison dart frog, which I used to compare, the Amazons would use it to put it on the tips of their arrow, and then they rub it on the back of the skin because the type of the ants or the insects that the poison dart eats results in a poison oil that comes out on their skin. And then when they shoot it into a monkey specifically, it paralyzes them. Well, what a better way to hit a target is to paralyze it so he doesn't move or duck down and catch him off guard, and he's oblivious to what's happening. He doesn't know what's happening, and then keep shooting at him. It sounds perfect. It's exactly what I think happened, you know.
So you got a supporter here in John Carman, Alan, and
I also, how I can argue against David's glass shark theory is also obvious to me this way. That is, JFK suffered facial wounds. They were caused by glass sharks, but they were irregular superficial cuts. They were not like the posterior wounds or the throat wounds, which is small and round. That's a big difference. And to me, it's a checkmate. Now, about the posterior wound, Ralph Sink argues that was a flesh wound, or I spell it, he thinks. But because the copper test was positive, then we can conclude that there was a bullet involved. But guess what? A bullet was also found, like there were four or five bullets found in the limousine. One of them was specifically in the clothing, in the back clothing of JFK.
Yeah, Alan, here we have your additional remarks about windshield crack. Actually, there was a through and through hole. Five bullets found in the limousine. You're going to need to expand on that, because if you mean parts of bullets, I would agree. Trajectory consistent with headshot, number two. Yeah, this, I think we agree. Now, this is from notes about an interview with Thomas Evan Robinson, who is a mortician who spent the most time with a body of anyone, describing the wounds. Large gaping hole in back of head, passed by stretching piece of rubber. He thinks it was full of plaster of Paris. Smaller wound in the right temple. Crescent-shaped flap down. This is a skull flap at the side of the head, about 3 inches, that David and I believe was caused by the exploding round fired from the side, from the curbside sewer opening. Here's now what you're addressing. Approximately 2 small shrapnel wounds in the face. He backed with wax. Wound in the back, 5 to 6 inches below the shoulder to the right of the back bone. Adrenaline gland and brain removed. Other organ removed and then put back. No swelling or discoloration of face. Died instantly, which you have alluded to as well. Alan, maybe tell us, I mean, just to elaborate, here's the Alton 6, which is the most important photograph we have of the assassination. Jack appears to be clutching his throat in the background. And if you look right here, where his left ear would be, if his left ear were visible, we have a small white spiral nebula indicative of a through-and-through hole in the windshield. Here you can see it more clearly with an arrow. Yes, the Secret Service later presented a windshield. It was actually a third, because the limousine had been sent back to Ford. It had been replaced with a brand-new windshield. But the Secret Service would later claim this windshield with spider cracks was the one on the limousine in Dallas, which was not the case. And, of course, we even have in frame 225, you can see where the bullet hole went through the windshield. Alan, pick up anywhere you like on that.
Well, yeah, I think these are very good points. I believe that there were many frontal shots including the crack that we see in the windshield. What I'm saying is, though, that doesn't prove that that is directly because of the throat shot. And that I'm eliminating, based upon the evidence that David offered, that the throat shot was not caused by a bullet, because we don't have cervical damage, because we don't have a neck exit wound, and because it's copper negative. Okay. Independent of it, we have all kinds of evidence, really compelling evidence, statistical evidence, that the chances are 99.9%, that a saxitoxin or neurotoxin was crucial. At the risk of repeating myself, the wounds from facial wounds that David also observes, that present, the glass shard wounds, are very different than the throat wound. One is round and simple and clean. The others are cuts, superficial cuts. The mortician's report further supports my hypotheses that saxitoxin is involved, because one of the specific effects is vasoconstriction, no bruising because of saxitoxin. That also goes along with my argument about delayed death. The JFK should have been dead right then. There should be no heart pumping, no breathing, nothing, right that instant. This is basic medical thing. How can they still have some evidence that blood was flowing, as reported by the doctors?
Let me offer a further discussion about what we're discussing here. Chuck Crenshaw, Charles Crenshaw, was present during the effort to revive JFK at Parkland, drew these diagrams of the appearance of the throat wound before and after the tracheostomy incision, which are consistent with Dr. Perry's description as a wound of entry, small clean wound of puncture with a line through it because of the incision. We've already been reviewing Thomas Evan Robinson's. I won't go back except to say David inferred those small shrapnel wounds in the face that he had to plug because they were leaking embalming fluid were from the bullet passing through the windshield and releasing them. He has established, by the way, that the official trajectory of a bullet entering the base of the back of the neck and exiting the throat is anatomically impossible because cervical vertebrae intervene. But, of course, it also implies that a bullet that had entered the front of the throat would not have been able to exit the back of the neck because cervical vertebrae intervene. Here is a further points that are made by Allen. The posterior wound 5 inches below the collar, actually 5.5, he suggests it's a small entry wound, either a flechette or a bullet. That copper positive means bullet, no exit wound of flechette, no bullet in the x-rays, flechette, a bullet found in JFK's clothing, flechette, signs of neurotoxin intoxication of flechette, poison WHIM specific cover-up flechette conclusion, very likely caused by a poison flechette. My opinion is highly unlikely. Here we have the jacket JFK was wearing at the time. Here we have the shirt JFK was wearing at the time. David had members of the staff put on the shirt and the jacket, found the hole in the shirt was slightly below the hole in the jacket. Here we have Boswell's diagram showing a wound here about 5.5 inches below the collar on the back. This is perhaps very important in this context because there were two FBI agents present during the autopsy, James Siebert and a fellow named O'Neill, and Siebert drew a diagram showing the wound to the throat was above the wound to the back. Meanwhile, Here we have Admiral Burkey composing a death certificate on JFK, saying how he was struck in the head but not otherwise describing it, and that a second wound occurred at the posterior back about the level of the third thoracic vertebrae. He did add the head wound involved the evisceration of the right hemisphere of the brain. He's not talking about the blowout at the back of the head, which is where it occurred. Third thoracic vertebrae is very much the same location where we see in the shirt and the jacket. Even the Warren Commission, when it did a reenactment, used a large round patch to represent where they were now claiming the bullet had entered the back, and a much smaller one at the head. You know, this separated the back wound from the back of the head wound when they did a reconstruction. And here you have Arlen Specter using a pointer to show how the bullet that went in the back of the neck is supposed to have hit John Connolly in the back, but the patch on the back, it refutes the theory all by itself. We also have evidence Roy Shaver discovered a bullet that hit him in the back faster than windshield, and we know, of course, Gerald Ford re-described the wound from the uppermost back, which was already an exaggeration, to the base of the back of the neck in an effort to make the magic bullet hypothesis appear more plausible. Here are other elements of Allen's position. The head bullet shot number one posterior, a fragment trailed from the EOP to the right parietal bone, presence of debris on the hood ornament fired from the Daltex. Conclusion, definitive evidence of a posterior entry bullet shot. Head bullet shot number two, striking above the right eye near the hairline from the triple overpass. Definitive evidence of a frontal entry bullet shot. Head bullet shot number three, right temple from grassy knoll. I think that's a mistake, David. I think you meant, Alan, curbside sewer opening, but it may be your view is it was fired from the grassy knoll. In any case, you take that to be definitive evidence of another frontal, or in this case, side bullet hole. Here's, of course, Malcolm Kilduff announcing the president's death as a simple matter of a bullet right through the head. Alan, yours.
I think I would stick to my point that the alteration of the throat wound is consistent with a flash wound. Okay, that's a very important element. About the posterior wound, I would like to comment this. If it were a bullet, where did the bullet go? Because we're not seeing it in the X-ray, where there was no evidence that bullet actually entered. And then we have the evidence that there was a bullet in the clothing. So it's possible that a posterior from back, a bullet came, but did not penetrate the skin and just fell down. That increases the likelihood of saxitoxin, neurotoxin, flesh entering posteriorly from back. But I surrender to this reality that I'm convinced, based upon medical evidence, that JFK was poisoned by neurotoxin. I'm not as certain about exactly when. I'm certain that the clinical picture is unmistakable for neurotoxin poisoning. Because we have the throat wound so perfectly fitting anything else with saxitoxin, then I say it's a checkmate, because we have both of them. We have the cover-up evidence. We have the clinical evidence, and we have a small entry wound on the throat, beautifully, in fact, described previously, not the wound, but the weapon, by William Colby in his testimony. For God's sake, why would William Colby would volunteer such sensitive information? It cannot. I mean, every word he said uttered in that testimony was a coded word referencing to JFK's assassination.
For the audience, Alan here is
beautiful in terms of demonstrating how it was done, but that's not my expertise. I'm not going there. I'm only using that as backup to supplement my discussion, being that clinical evidence as a doctor, when you look at this picture, you see an acute neurotoxin poisoning before the fatal headshots.
Let me say, just for the audience, that Alan is referring to testimony before the church committee, where they did establish the CIA had a gun that fired the poison flechettes and all that. I'm not disputing that whatsoever. There is, however, what I believe to be a far more plausible explanation that doesn't require the use of the exotic weapon and accounts is consistent with the other evidence we have, to wit, Bob Livingston, MD, world authority on the human brain and an expert on wound ballistics, having supervised an emergency medical hospital for injured Okinawans and Japanese prisoners of war during the Battle of Okinawa, told me he believed the bullet had hit a bony structure and fragment. This shot to the throat hit a bony structure and fragment. Part going upward to sever the tough membrane that covers the cerebellum, known as a tentorium, part downward into the right lung, where we find bruising from its removal, where the body was taken to Walter Reed before it arrived at Bethesda. And let me add that if that were the case, I suspect it would have done damage to Jack that would have been equivalent to paralysis. He's, of course, clutching his throat. Bob said he believed that was indeed the Thorburn complex, and that I'm surprised we're getting interference here with this. But I believe that's more plausible. In fact, Sam Kinney, who is the driver of the Secret Service Cadillac, was given a bucket of water and a sponge to wash the blood and brains out of the back seat, to which you've alluded, Alan, and reported to his neighbor he found a whole slug there, which he took inside and left on a stretcher, where it later be discovered to become the magic bullet. But there was no magic bullet. Alan, go ahead. I'm getting feedback, oddly enough. Go ahead.
I think if Dr. Livingston were alive, he would have agreed with me. As a doctor, Dr. Livingston would have said that, yes, this is a small entry wound. And because there is no cervical damage, and because there is no exit wound, it was not a bullet wound. And the clinical symptoms would have convinced any doctor, then or now, that there was a saxitoxin poisoning.
Alan, one of the reasons, of course, they wanted to take the body to the Bethesda is because Jack was a former naval officer. They had his medical records there. And just as David established the alteration of X-rays galore, it would have been easy to sub in not just a chest X-ray, but a JFK chest X-ray that removed the damage done by hitting a bony structure. But I do not believe Bob would have changed his analysis at all. I'm interested in getting John in on this. John, give us your thoughts.
I was getting a little feedback there. I wanted to show a comparison of what I think a flechette would look like in a dime shape. I don't know if you guys can see it up close.
A dime shape.
That's a dime right here. And off to the side,
dime right here, and off to,
which is very, very small. And if they put that in a special device or gun, and edges on jagged edges, you could put ricin in it. You could put polonium.
Edges on jagged edges,
or toxin, which is probably no bigger than the nail of your finger. It's small.
If someone happens to be tuning in here, mute. Just mute yourself because we're getting the feedback, I think, because you're there. I'm hoping, by the way, that David Manning, we may be lucky enough that he'll join us during the final segment and on Zoom, I'm hoping. Anyway, John, continue. You're talking about the size of the flechette.
Yeah, so the thing about the flechette disc is that's one thing that they actually described in the church hearing back in 72, I believe, on the House Assassinations Committee. And you guys mentioned Colby. Colby suffered retaliation, and he himself was killed because...
You guys mentioned Colby.
Yeah.
See what I mean? There's a pattern again going on.
Because of...
Alan, go ahead.
Alan, go ahead.
No, I fully agree with what's being said, that Colby suffered retaliation because of this very testimony. This very testimony revealing oxytocin. It's a protoxin weapon. And to risk of repeating myself, I would say the clinic... for any other explanation. And secondly, David also agrees that, David disagrees with Livingston. David thinks that the throat wound was not bullet caused. It was a glass shard. So the argument is narrowed. Is it glass or is it soxytocin? And soxytocin wins on mathematical grounds.
Well, unless it was the bullet and Bob Livingston has it right, which I affirm he does.
The danger of it is that we're helping our enemies in many ways. It's controversial.
We got another break, Alan, and hopefully David will join us in the meanwhile. We'll be right.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm here today with Alan Solarian, the former top shrink for the FBI, who has a theory about the use of a neurotoxin, Flechette, during the assassination in Dallas in 1963, and John Carman, who has some familiarity with the use of Flechette, including during the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, where he was not hit by any bullet fired by John Hinckley, but rather when he was being pushed into the Secret Service limousine by an agent. He fired the Flechette that barely missed Reagan's heart to convey the message, let George do it, where George H.W. Bush was essentially running the government thereafter. Alan, I've invited David to join. I was showing, of course, the image of Malcolm Kilduff reporting it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head. And I think it's dumbfounding in retrospect to realize the Warren Commission essentially denies there were any shots from in front, and therefore denies what Admiral Berkeley concluded, denies what Malcolm Kilduff was showing, denies what was being reported on radio and television that day. This must have greatly emboldened them in the belief they can tell the American people anything, no matter what the evidence, and they'll swallow it because we're gullible saps. Your thoughts? Alan, we're getting interference clearly, so I don't know how much you heard of that or not, but can you comment, Alan? John, I don't think you can either. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, to back up on the Reagan thing, to be clear, it was actually allegedly a CIA agent. Somebody was claiming it might have been Felix Rodriguez behind and up in the building of the Hilton who shot the Flechette disc into Reagan as he raised his arm in your TV screen this way to the left side of his chest. These Flechette discs are being used for quite a bit because that's the whole purpose of it, to make it look like the lone male gunman shooting a regular gun of some sort. And they actually had mercury tip bullets when they don't want to discuss that. But the stuff about the neurotoxins is very, very feasible because they had the shards of glass, which shows it could have come through the front windshield. And they can develop these things to go through almost anything made of a special material, even back then. You know, the difference between a titanium Flechette would be 10 times stronger than steel, so that means it's definitely going to go through the windshield and hit the target just below the collar bone area or into the neck, which is where they indicated it. And what's interesting is they destroyed the entrance wounds by doing an alleged tracheotomy. So there's all these cover-ups going along and along. More bullets found in the vehicle. The actual JFK vehicle that I protected in this building in D.C. at 1310 L Street, which has now been re-switched out to another building, they didn't want us to go inside to actually touch anything. I'm surprised they didn't put a tarp over it. But it was just a thing like a, you know, show and tell night on training or something. So there's all these indicators, you know, and we'll probably not even see it in our lifetime. I talked to Jim Garrison before he passed away in 91, 92 era. He says, stay healthy, don't smoke, don't drink. And within the 75 year period, we're going to find out everything. And then all of a sudden, Poppy Bush is about to die. So Donald Trump pulls it back for another 90 days, I guess. Is they're going to release more information. We are so left in the dark, we don't know what's really happening. They're keeping us in the dark forever because of the people that are still alive and involved with the assassination in 63. You know, and it's all there. The indicators are there. Poisons, Flechette darts, Flechette discs, special weapons. Look over there, not over there. I mean, it's all consistent.
Well, Alan, I think, took himself out so he could rejoin and we'd have a better connection. Hopefully that'll happen. I'm going to open the lines to callers. Area code 608-957-8727. 608-957-8727. We may or may not have Alan with us, but we'd be glad to hear from you. John, I want to go back to this Tarif Campbell thing. I mean, I think this is a huge scandal. You got a former president of the United States who there's evidence indicating he performed a murder, and then he's getting away with it scot-free. The only source I know pursuing it, a judicial watch, Tom Vitton has published several pieces about it. Your further thoughts?
I'm sorry, I think I missed the point on that.
Tarif Campbell, the chef for Obama.
Oh, the chef, yeah. I couldn't understand. I was going, what? I think it's kind of obvious because here's a guy who's working for them personally. He's a personal chef. When you work at the White House, that's a very special detail. I was asked one time to even be on the shopping detail. They said, oh, that sounds exciting. What's it about? Well, you get to escort the people that buy the food at the special meat markets, supermarkets, all that. And if they're going to have a state dinner or something, they have to buy a ton of food, have all kinds of stuff delivered. But guess what? They have to have Secret Service protecting every aspect of anything that comes into the White House grounds. And because to prevent, guess what? Poisoning. We won't talk about food tasters, will we?
Sure.
Food tasters. Oh, I don't know about this. Here, you try it, you know, and see what happens to the guy. That's the first way that they would do it, is to contaminate the food. So there's an aspect of that. So that has to be a very highly trusted person. They have to get a top secret clearance performed back to when before they were born. And if there's anything in their background, they certainly wouldn't be able to pull them in, unless, of course, you were the Clintons, and then you overrode all these people coming into the White House. That's another kind of a sarcasm, but it's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, the indicators are there. Something happened between them and a little jealousy trip or something was going on. And I don't want to say that, you know, when you get three people together and it doesn't mix out right, you know, you get a little problems, you know.
Alan, I'm glad you rejoined. I inferred you dropped to get a better connection. Please give us further thoughts if we are indeed in contact. Alan, the floor is yours. They don't want Alan to be talking. I think this is further confirmation of his suspicion that he's onto something. Go ahead, Alan, if you can. Can you say anything?
Yeah, he's breaking up like he's getting delayed there. The connection's being interfered.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I've seen it happen a couple of times on some other shows. They will purposely intrude in on the connection
Yeah.
There's a way that Langley and Fort Meade can do stuff. You know, see.
I've done a hell of a lot of Zoom videos, and this is one of the rarest of rare occasions. I can't recall anything quite like this ever happening before. But given the subject matter, given the subject matter, I think that's the explanation. But it really tends to confirm Alan's thesis, even though I think it's mistaken. I believe I have excellent reasons for rejecting it. But yet, the firing of the editor of the journal, the harassment of Alan, this kind of interference right here on this show when we're discussing it, and I'm seeking to rebut it, but yet they're not letting Alan even present it. That's pretty damning, John, don't you think?
Yeah, it's an obvious block of some sort. And I look at these patterns, and when you see the same type of patterns, the government interference, you know, we don't live in the United States of America anymore. People keep hoping and hoping.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a dictatorship and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If they control it to the point where they're killing scientists, putting people in prison, talking about these subjects, and I've talked about serious subjects as well, because I interviewed John W. Hinckley in 76.
Right. Right.
I've seen the limo. I worked in the White House. I've been at the desk, the Resolute desk that Kennedy used to be. I mean, there's all kinds of weird connections. We had people left over from the Kennedy administration still working. And there's a lot of problems. They altered the Zapruder film that I saw that was in 74. I didn't see the actual corrected original. And that was in 95. That's when I was reaching out to other people because I was on injury leave at that time for about 8 or 9 months. So there's a lot of indicators, and yet they don't want us to know the truth. Well, why is that? Because they're covering up all the complicity in felony, high treason. They're afraid to say high treason. The Congress, the Senate, and people in our own government are afraid to acknowledge it because then they would be complicit in high treason as well. And you mentioned Gerald Ford. I protected Gerald Ford. And he supposedly was the one who had the notes on the entry in the back raised or lowered or moved because it was like about 6 inches, 5 3/4 inches down from the shoulder area off to the right of the spinal cord. There's a good example. Now, notice that he's in lane number two. Why is he in lane number two, not lane number one? Because lane number two is closest to the storm drain area and the grassy knoll and the fence closest to the shooters. That's what I noticed a while ago.
Very interesting, John. Yeah, say more.
Look at that. See that? Closest to the shooters, not off to the far left. And frame 313 that you just saw has always been altered. That's a prophetic number for me. Oh, it's still breaking up.
Yeah. I don't know. Alan, say if any, try to speak and see if we can hear you. John, continue with your comments because I think
That was a good part. I sent you the other video yesterday because we had gunshots, which they've also taken the sound out of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Can you play that from your side?
I don't know if I can. I didn't have it up because I rebooted the computer, but I'm going to try real quick.
I think Alan's trying to talk, but it's all garbled, so we can't make out any of the words.
Yeah, it would be a maneuver.
Apologies that I didn't have that up myself.
Yeah, hold on a second. Yeah, I sent it to you. Here it is, the JFK video, MOV 5 shots. I'll pull that up.
Yeah, can you play it? Perhaps we can hear it.
Yeah,
it's
I'm going to play it over. It's on now.
Yeah, we're not hearing anything. Perhaps if I make you host.
This film was taken from the fourth floor of the depository as the prison approached. This is the shot that would have been taken if you're not waiting for crossfire.
Can you turn it up? Can you turn up the volume?
No, I can't. Hold on a second. I'm going to send you the link.
Well, no, you go ahead and play it again. Play it again. We could hear it, but faintly, that's all. I'll turn up my speaker. I'll turn up my speaker. You play it again. Play it.
You know, the spacing of the bullet sound is very indicative. There were at least 3 to 4 or 5 shooters. Hold on a second. I'm going to try and send you the link again.
John.
But I did send it to you on email last night.
Yeah, I know, John. I know. Give us an overview of your assessment, Alan's theory about the use of a flechette.
Well, I think he's got a good point, because remember, a lot of times in assassinations, they don't want to tell you about the poison. That's like a very first thing. It's a sure thing. Even I'm thinking of the North Korean relative to Kim Jong-un, who was touched by a scarf. Just to use a real lousy prop here, and all it took was the woman to stroke it across his skin. That was it, because he became incapacitated within seconds to a minute, and then he started to go into like cardiac arrest and all that stuff. That's all it takes. He gets fentanyl or pure version of a certain toxin that's poisonous. That's it. Just a quick touch. That's why Secret Service is always supposed to be there, to prevent somebody from reaching out with something to touch this president. And even the President Trump, when he's out there in these restaurants, and he's giving away 30 milkshakes or something, and then he's allowing people to get pictures, they have to be really on top of it. They have to really be looking at these people's eyes to see if they're a potential threat, to evaluate them real quick. And if they see anything that's out of ordinary, even if a person's coming up with a pen, for Christ's sake, here's a big pen, and the size of the little, remember the rolling pen, the little big rolling pens? Yeah, I'm trying to put it up so you can barely see it. The tip of that pen is a fine. It's a fine tip roller ball on the inside of it. That's what transfers the ink down to the point where you're rotating it over paper or whatever. Those things were drilled with a very micro drill so that they had 3 to 4 or 5 holes in them. So that's where they would put ricin or polonium type of radioactive poison. Just that much would take enough. Just to hit the skin, break the skin, you're gone within 72 hours. So all these things about assassination techniques, they don't want to put it out, because then they could be more adept about preventing it. No different than I mentioned the poison dart frog oil, which all it takes is for the Amazon natives, they'll take the actual arrowhead, rub it over the top of the skin of the poison dart frog, and they have really interesting colors like green and yellow and red and so forth. And that's because they eat certain types of bugs, which reacts to a poison exuding from their skin and their oil. Then when it hits the monkey that they would shoot in the trees, he's paralyzed, and then he drops to the ground. And then after that, they do whatever they need to do to dissect him for lunch. And supposedly it doesn't affect him when it's neurologically affected the body, but they're only eating another part of it, which is the meat. So they know what they're doing. There's toxic fish. They used to use the toxins from certain rockfish. The poison dart frog, they use them for certain animals and species that we aren't even aware of because they covered up. That's all part of their research and development section at Langley and a couple other places. And they'll test them on individuals, no different than the CIA tested LSD on black military people back in the 40s. You know, that's or the person that got overdosed with LSD at Bethesda Naval Hospital. And that guy jumped out the window.
Or was tossed. You're talking about James Forrestal.
Yes, there you go.
But I suspect he was thrown out a window. But yeah.
Right. Yeah. But like you mentioned, Bethesda. Yeah, they were switching bodies. They took one body to Bethesda. They could have flown out to there if they wanted to. And then one drove out. The other one was another casket back and forth. But they were sensitive about people touching that limo. And I was up there touching the outside of the limo. I wanted to get inside, look around, just to see. You know, maybe the guy saved my life because maybe you can't get all the toxins out of the back seat or not. Joke. Or the mercury.
No, the limousine sent back to Ford and totally stripped down to metal and rebuilt. John, there wasn't any, you know.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
In fact, it was Texas where they supposedly build all the limos.
Yeah.
Special contract. So they could go in there and replace the whole windshield in a matter of 20 minutes, half an hour.
Well, listen, I mean, one of my investigators, colleagues, who's at JD, tracked down the guy who replaced the windshield at Ford, and he confirmed there was a through-and-through bullet with beveling on the inside and that they were instructed to destroy it, just as they were instructed to rip the vehicle down to bare metal and rebuild it, which, of course, is a destruction of evidence in the most important assassination in the history of the United States. And that was done by Lyndon and Edgar, who were complicit in the crime and wanted to make sure there was no evidence.
People in Secret Service, they got rewarded for their keeping their mouths shut. No different than when Lyndon Johnson had a walkie-talkie in the follow-up vehicle. Why would a vice president have a walkie-talkie? And then when the first round supposedly went off, the first explosion of a gunshot, he ducks down real quick, and the agent's like looking over him to see what's wrong with him.
I think he was ducking even before the first shot, John, because he knew what was happening. He'd orchestrated the whole event.
He anticipated it. That's an anticipated Flint.
Yeah, of course.
That's what that was. Well, that guy ended up getting rewarded. In fact, there was the James Rawlings Center is the name of the Beltsville Training Center north of College Park, Maryland, when I had to go for 6 to 8 weeks specialized training. So now that's what that occurred. You know, a lot of people don't realize when I went to Secret Service in 1974, just after Nixon left, agents were being paid, uniform division, non-uniform, $11,600 a year in 1974. That was the base pay. Can you imagine? I went to U.S. Customs later, and you start off with like $39,000 to $40,000.
Well, you think at that rate of pay, it'd be pretty easy to bribe a Secret Service agent to do something nefarious. I mean,
Well, yeah, you would think. And I've been approached at least once by a Russian female outside the gates coming up to give me her phone number.
Oh, really? To get to know you better.
I'll call you, right?
She wanted to get to know you better, John.
I missed it. I missed it. What'd you say?
She wanted to get to know you better.
Yeah, she did. But you have to turn it in. You have to call up Internal Affairs on your phone. You know, hey, this is Officer Carmen at the West Gate, whatever. And I just got approached, and she gave me a number. So I'll meet with you guys later and give you the phone number so we can set up a deal. You know, well, I guess I didn't get called in on that assignment, so they probably used somebody else. Or here's the 180 degrees, or maybe it was a setup by Internal Affairs to test me anyway.
Could have been, sure.
And that didn't work. So they knew I could be trusted. Worthy of trust and confidence is a very common phrase in Secret Service nowadays. But there's still a lot of stuff going on. Every time they get a new person on the assignments, they're all being exposed to frequencies, the Havana syndrome, that kind of stuff, toxins, poisons, gases, you name it. In fact, they could shoot a special, not even a pellet. Remember when you're military, you probably got the shots by the injectable gun with an air gun?
I don't remember if I did or didn't, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, they would put a, an injectable. I'm trying to use a prop here. Here's a prop. Here's a little thing. They take this little bottle of liquid, which has their vaccine. They screw it into the bottom of their pistol.
Yeah.
And they just line recruits up all day.
Right.
Pop, next, pop, next. Right. You can get all five vaccines or all five injections in one air-injected liquid right there. And it's the same difference. They could shoot you at a distance, and it can still be effective if it was concentrated enough. And you may get it right in your face as if you're outside and you think, oh, I just got hit by an insect. Or a bird or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's all it takes.
Right.
It's very innocent, but that's how serious it is.
Right. Right.
But we're running out of time here. We got like, what, about 5 minutes?
No. Maybe 60 seconds. Yeah. Now, John, it's just been great having Alan on here and you. I thought it was a very wonderful interaction, especially because of your knowledge about these plushettes. And while I disagree with Alan about this particular issue, I sure respect the guy tremendously, and he's giving circumstantial reason to think that he just might be right. Firing the editor, seizing all of his property. The interference today on the show, John, that was extraordinary. There's no need for that. So
those are the indicators.
Yeah. They might be onto something. So I got to say, and of course, I admire the guy beyond words for what he's gone through and his efforts to expose truths. You know, JFK is just one of his fascinations. And as I mentioned, I have one of his paintings on my wall, Elm Street. It's wonderful. And he was severely, as a whistleblower, John, he's been severely abused.
Yeah, well, I can relate to that because I've been through it myself. I mean, if they haven't done an IRS audit, accused you of a crime you didn't do, pulled you over by the police, thrown in prison for whatever charge, they will do that. I just heard recently that Trump is going to be willing to give Julian Assange a pardon. Julian Assange is not an American citizen, and he's not being charged in the United States, but they're trying to get him over here. So,
extradition has been approved. John, thank you. Alan, you're not here, but you were wonderful. Everyone, as much as you can, family, your friends, the people you love and care about, because we do not know how much time we have left. And
Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe,
I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.